Hey there, friends. Welcome to the Taking Your Next Step podcast from Collegians for Christ. Through each episode, we will journey together focusing on knowing what you believe and why you believe it. If you are eager, like I am, to strengthen your faith, then take your next step now by joining us in today's episode. Well, on today's episode and also on next week, we're going to look at and examine what is often referred to as the parable of the prodigal son. As you look at this parable, there's really three characters that are in the parable. You have the younger son, the older son, and the father, and often all the emphasis is placed on the younger son, and rightfully so, he has a big part in it. But I think we could correctly title this as the parable of the two sons or the parable of the two lost sons. As we're going to see, there's great emphasis on the older son. And so we have a younger son, an older son, and the father. And as Jesus reveals this, he's speaking to two different groups of people. If we back up into Luke 15, we see he's speaking to the Pharisees and scribes, and he's also speaking to publicans and sinners. And he's going to identify one of these sons with each of these groups. Now, the two brothers reveal two different, shall I say, very different ways to be separated from God and to seek acceptance or favor with God in heaven. Now, these are two different ways of life that people pursue personal significance, their worth, their meaning, happiness, and purpose. And they're this. The first one is self-discovery, and the second one is moral duty. The younger son went on a path of self-discovery. The older son kept all the rules of the father, and so his path would be that of moral duty. They're both ways for you and I to attempt to fix the broken world. The self-discovery says this. I'm going to go out. I'm going to explore all my options and give everything a try. This type of person likes to push the boundaries, to break the social norms, to live the college life. Maybe you hear that from college students, kind of a stereotype there. What would be some negatives from this? Well, it can tend to self-centeredness. It's all about me, my goals. I'm the only one who can decide what is right or wrong for me. I'm going to live my life my way, and you can push God right out. The positive, though, is people with this will discover why they believe what they believe. They're not just going to take it because someone said it, or just because someone else is doing it. And so there can be positive and negatives. The second one is moral duty. This person says this, I'm not going to do what I want to, but what tradition and community wants me to do. They feel that strict obedience to the rules, the laws, the traditions will do this. It will produce happiness, fulfillment, and meaning. Now, there's negative and positives to this one as well. The negative is it leads to legalism. It creates a better than others type of attitude. It creates prejudice, racism. There's a pride in self, and we feel like we've done something for God so that he owes us. So we're trying to earn favor with God. And honestly, people like this are truly unhappy on the inside. The positive is they do put others before themselves. They do live good lives. Now, one writer said this, Timothy Keller. He said, our society is so divided over both of these approaches. And he had this to say, the moral conformists say the immoral people, the people who do their own thing, are the problem with the world, and the moral people are the solution. The advocates of self-discovery say the bigoted people, the people who say we have the truth, are the problem with the world, and progressive people are the solution. Each side says our way is the way the world would be put to rights, and if you're not with us, you are against us. And we see that revealed so starkly in our society right now. And people can go from one to the other. People can have a little bit of one and a little bit of other. I know it's a generalization, but Jesus is teaching and there is two paths that people will try to pursue: happiness, fulfillment, and to earn favor, if you will, with God. So as we go to our passage here, we're going to see the extravagant love of God first, and then we'll see next week why good doesn't mean better. Now, as we look at the passage here, the younger son, we see he asked for his inheritance. It says, and the younger son said to his father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country. And there, it says, wasted his substance with riotous living. So we see he roamed away from the father. He wandered away thinking that he knew better than the father. He thought that the world had more to offer him. How often do we find ourselves there thinking the world has more to offer us? He felt like the father was withholding something from him. you know, living the Christian life, sometimes people think that God is holding them back. He's keeping something from them. And that's what Satan likes to dangle in front of our faces, to make us feel like God is keeping something from him, from us. And so he wandered away by asking for his inheritance. And this was very disrespectful to his father. Think about it. An inheritance is typically given when a family member dies, not while they're alive. So ultimately, he was wishing that his father was dead. What he was saying is he wants the father's things, but not the father. And how often do we want the benefits of God, but not the full surrender to God? We want his safety. We want his answers to prayer. We want good health. We want the financial benefits. We want a good life, yet we don't want to give full surrender to him. That is the condition, the mind frame, if you will, of the younger brother as he roamed away, wandered away from the father. But as he wandered away, he came to himself. He realized his personal condition. You see, he wasted his living pursuing life without the father, and ultimately he hit rock bottom. It says, and when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. So here's a Jew doing what no Jew should ever do, and that is be around pigs. They are unclean animals. And here he's feeding them, working with them, and he is so hungry because he has no money left that he desires to eat the pig food. And it says, when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? And we see here he hits rock bottom. You see, he was living life all for himself. He was trying to fill the void, and the world and the lifestyle that he was living could not fill the void. It says he wasted it. He spent it all on this extravagant, riotous living. Now, exactly what he did, we don't know, but you can imagine the dark side of the world with this riotous living. Doing that, the world could not fill the void. And so he hit rock bottom. And when he did that, he came to himself. He realized who he was, that he was a sinner, and that confession was needed. He was trying to figure out, how can I go back to my father and confess I was wrong? So he realized who he was, but he also realized who the father was. It was who he really needed. It was who he was really longing for. It was who he would receive his identity, purpose, and meaning from. You see, the father represents God as father. And he realized as he hit rock bottom, he realized his need for the father. So he devises a plan to go back, not as a family member, because he understood what he did. He gave up his right as a son. He disrespected the father, and the father had every right not to let him come back home. But he said, I'll just come back home as an employee. You see here, he had to take the first step to go back to God. The father never left. The father is there waiting for the son. And we see he returned to the father. Now, what type of response was the younger son thinking he was going to receive? Obviously, based on his attempt here to devise a confession, a plan, and so forth, that he was not going to receive a favorable response. That the father was going to maybe let him work, but definitely not receive him back. But as he goes back to the father, he is met with the extravagant love of the father. The father had every right not to look at his son, every right to feel so disrespected, every right to let his son stay out there. But yet his father pounces on him with his love. He is waiting, and we see in our passage here, he runs to him. He goes, and it says, and he arose and came to his father. But watch this, but when he was a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father interrupted him. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. And so his father pounces on him with his love. You see, he's waiting, and he runs to him before he has a chance to clean up his life, before he can recite his repentant speech to his father, before there is evidence of a changed love. This is why the father's love is so extravagant. He was given the best robe. This would have been the father's robe, which shows he was restored not just as a servant. He was restored fully back into the family. Nothing but full restoration would do. There was no debt to be paid or worked off first. There was no probationary period. And in our mind frame, we would say, yes, there should be. But here we see the extravagant love of God. He's given a ring. He's given shoes. And the father held a feast. You see, the parable shows the exaggeration in the celebration. It reveals the joy that the father offers. You see, the father's love was extravagant because the son did not deserve it. He was overboard in how he showed it and how he proved it. And it was all in spite of how he treated the father. Now, I don't know about you. There's many people that will wander away from maybe their childhood, growing up in church or hearing about Jesus or whatever, and go out into the world because they think it has so much more to offer. But we see the world cannot fill that void that you have. There are times that you and I as Christians wander away from God. We get cold. We wander away. We're not faithful anymore, whatever the case may be. But we have to understand God is waiting for us to return with open arms. There's nothing you can do that can ever separate you from the love of God. There's no sin that's gross enough that can keep you from the love of God. Nothing, not even bold-faced rejection to the Father, can keep His love away. His love and acceptance is absolutely free. You and I cannot do anything to remove ourselves from it, nor can you and I do anything to earn it. It's extravagantly free. So God is waiting for you to return. No matter how bad you have messed up, how long you have been gone, or what you've done, will you come back to Him? God's love is so extravagant that you and I as believers who are there with the Father must share it with the world. So will you tell others about His extravagant love?
Thank you for taking the time to listen. If this podcast has been helpful to you, please share it with a friend or subscribe to stay up to date on the latest episodes. You can connect with Collegians for Christ online for more information and resources at cfccampusministry.com.